Hello. Hi, my name is Martina and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Spirit of Freedom on the Gold Coast. You're all welcome on a Tuesday night. Welcome to the Aussie Paw Convention. Some housekeeping. The toilets are, I'm sure you guys have all figured out where the toilets are. They're right there in the foyer. Smoking is all the way to the right side as you leave the building. There's some butt cans there. And tea and coffee are available all day long in the foyer. In case of emergency, meet at the bottom of the stairs. The AA preamble. And I'll now hand that over. No, I'm going to read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement is for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And I'll hand it over to Courtney.
Too short for this. Hi, my name is Courtney and I'm an alcoholic. The format of this meeting is that we have two guest speakers sharing for 10 minutes each. We will then be selecting people from around the room to share for 5 minutes each, concluding the meeting with a final 10-minute guest speaker. Speakers will get a one-minute wrap-it-up card along with a finish card. If you've already been asked to share at this convention, please decline to give others a chance. The topic for this meeting is facing indecision. Ask God, then take it easy. The reading comes from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, page 86. Facing indecision, ask God, then relax and take it easy. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how right the answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes part of the working mind. Being still in experience and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. I will now call our first speaker, Tiffany I from Bray Park. Oh, sorry.
Well, that took the winds out of me sails because she read the part I was going to read. Hi, my name's Tiffany. I'm an alcoholic. Sorry, my name. I feel very privileged to be asked on. This is really nerve-wracking for me. My first line of all I could think of was being asked to about facing indecisions, and I'm really undecided about what I'm going to share. But for me, I've been thinking about this for a while, and of course I did the alcoholic thing, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you know, did about 6 shares in my head before I handed it over, and you know, that's usual for me. I don't think I'm alone there, and. That part that she just wrote on page 86, just before it, is actually, I've lost my spot. What I really like is just before it is actually, under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And for me, indecision comes when I ain't too sure about my motives. That's when indecision shows up, when it's the, am I getting something I want but at the cost of something else? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's when my indecision comes up. I was given an opportunity actually not that long ago, quite recently actually, and it was an opportunity presented to me from a friend of a friend, but my partner's not talking to the friend that knows the friend, right? So I've been given offered something by this person, and instantly my brain's gone, oh, I'm going to murky the waters, oh no, I can't do this, I can't do it, I can't accept it. And I had to sit down, I actually had to pray about it. My uncomfortability, of course, was doing something that may hurt my partner. But what I realised is I wasn't actually dealing with that person, I was dealing with another person, and it was a purely business deal. And that, you know, because it's funny, because my first thought isn't always right. You know, I'm not always, for me, stuff's done at a gut level. But for me, at the end of the day, it's not about me, it's about God. It's about that. When I hit that bump and my gut does that flip-flop and I go, oh, hold on, I'm not comfortable. I have to make a decision here, you know? It's about that wait, stop, pause, you know? And then I used to do the cower and the hide and the if I don't make a decision, then I'm not going to have to worry about it. But actually not making a decision is also a decision also. So you don't get out of it that way. So sorry, I feel really nervous. I really do. And I feel a bit out of my depth right now. Because what do I have to say? I'm very much a simple alcoholic. I came into recovery at 20, it was 1999. And I thought it was awesome, thought it was great, because all of a sudden there was a bunch of people who could never tell me to go away. They couldn't kick me out. And then I found this really awesome thing called this social network of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's great. You drink heaps of coffee, you talk, you neg rave, you tell all your stories. You don't really change much, except you're drinking coffee. You know, and I did that for a while, and that hurt for a long while. And then I relapsed and I went away to Melbourne and I came back to the Gold Coast Fellowship and I was 2 months sober and 3 months pregnant at 21, sorry. And then started my journey. Funny enough, one of my sponsors is sitting right there for that period of time. Yeah, I started my journey of recovery. I did the 12 steps. I got into service, but didn't pray much. You know, I got into the working side. So I moved from the social side of Alcoholics Anonymous to the working side of it, where I did so much service and did so much judgment on everybody else who didn't do service, you know, and decided that I had come, you know, was it because I did service. And, you know, I learned my lesson there. And I relapsed after 11 years of recovery. And I relapsed for 9 months. In that journey of learning that I was the service guru of Alcoholics Anonymous, I also got a husband and made him my higher power, so that was great. When he left, started my recovery. You know. And then, so for 9 months I drank. And then I came back in again. And I tell you, after a little while, those doors really do get thinner and thinner. But I know that I have a message of hope. Because the simple reason is I'm still standing here and I'm still surviving. And sometimes I'm even thriving, depending on the day. But, you know, I came back in and I got a sponsor and I got really introduced to the 12 steps. And I started to have a spiritual awakening, and it started to happen for me. I didn't feel ill at ease in my own skin, you know. I didn't have to worry so much about getting it wrong, You know, I didn't feel like I was living on that knife's edge, you know. That's a lot of my recovery has been that knife's edge where you're just not too sure if you're doing enough and you're not too sure if you're falling away, you know. And I wasn't living like that. I was living free. Shoulders started to go back. And then I got to my ninth step. And I had a massive resentment. My book literally flew across the room. I threw it. There ain't no way I'm making amends to them. I have any idea what they've done to me. And it took me 6 months. And I went back out there for one night. Funny enough, after I had a fight with the person I had a resentment with. One night. And in that one night, I lost custody of my daughter. I lost my house. I ended up on my sponsor's floor, sleeping on a mattress for 3 months. And we started again. And for me, that's been the most amazing journey. I have 18 months now. I'm still on my ninth step. Still on my ninth step, but I haven't thrown the book yet. And I have started. I did go back. Didn't start my ninth step. I went back to step one. I don't believe in this have a bust and pick up on the step you're on. Don't believe in that, because obviously there's something missing if you picked up a drink. You know, and I guess in some ways, you know, my whole story is about facing indecision. Am I in or am I out? You know, what am I going to do today? Am I going to work further from my last drink, or am I going to work closer to my next bust? You know, because that's what it comes down to. I mean, we can all become spiritual gurus, but the simple reason is you pick up a drink, you're a drunk. You know, bring it back. Look at it in reality. We hurt those we love. It's not just, oh, my spirituality isn't as fine-tuned today. I lose people. I hurt people. You know? I lose myself. That's the greatest gift that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, is at the end of the day, I've got me. You know, what I have to say will be met with two responses, either contempt or revelation of what I say. But that actually has nothing to do with me. That's everybody else's business. All I can say is this is my truth. It's a 1 minute warning. It's going to blow. In all seriousness, and you know, the thing that does actually make, you know, we're deadly serious about our alcoholism, but the rest of it, we've got to laugh. You've got to laugh at the mistakes you make. None of us are getting out alive, kids. None of us are getting out alive. So you might as well have a laugh while you're here and enjoy it. I'm sober enough to remember what I've done and what I've said. I remember the last dirty joke I told, you know? I haven't done anything today that has stopped my dignity or my integrity being in place. And that for me means more than anything. I have integrity today. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I'll do it. If I tell you I'm not going to do something, I won't do it. I know myself. That's a life beyond my wildest dreams. Nobody can make me do anything. I don't have to be in relationships I don't want to be in with people I don't want to be in with. You know? I'm free. And I'm wrapping it up. Thank you.
All right. And our second speaker, guest speaker, is Diana from New Zealand.
I'm Diana, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
I'm from Auckland and I'm over here for the weekend. And it feels real privileged to be asked to come here and share, and feel really nervous actually. And what was suggested to me was that I shut my eyes and let God guide me. So if it doesn't go very well, we know who to blame. I started drinking when I was 14. I didn't drink every day, but when I did, it was so good because I could be the person that I thought that I wanted to be, and, you know, underneath it all, I was always unbearably insecure and too shy, and life was hard, and it started there, and my journey took me to Australia, and I started using other drugs, and I tried AA for a long time before I eventually cleaned up. And I was one of those really tragic relapses that just didn't get it. And I'm never judgmental on anybody that's really struggling, because, you know, I was one of those people that people really didn't think I'd ever clean up. I even really surprised myself. I knew step one really well for at least 6 years. I knew I was powerless over drugs and alcohol. I knew my life was a mess. I just didn't have any self-control when it came to using. And it wasn't actually step one that cleaned me up. It was actually step two. Somebody had said to me, you're happy to put up your hand and say, hey, I'm Diana and I'm an alcoholic, but you don't know what it means to be an alcoholic. And when you know what that means, you'll turn your life around. And it was just like absolutely bang on, and I got the picture straight away, because I was happy. I just thought I was just playing the game. I was just going along with, you know, whatever. You know, I couldn't stop drinking, so I was just happy to do whatever it took. But I wasn't feeling it. And as soon as I could identify with all those other traits of an alcoholic, I could get it. And that's what step two for me was about, was seeing that what I was doing, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. I didn't know that what I was doing was just a little bit nutty. And so as soon as I could see that module, I was just on the right track. And I've been strong in my recovery ever since, and it's because I always hold that fear. I do everything I'm told in recovery because of the fear of ever going back. And I love going to lots and lots of meetings because it gives me that daily reminder, that daily practice of not forgetting where I came from, and I know I carry the disease of denial. I can come up with a series of events, just a slightly different perspective on how other people see life, and I really need that. I need people to keep me in my correct thinking. Yeah, I can come up with a really good version quite a lot. That relax and take it easy topic was a good one for me, because I found this quite stressful, being asked to share at a convention. I didn't know who was going to be there, how many people. And so it really required a lot of faith. And I decided what's worked for me in the past. In my past 12 years, I've had a really beautiful connection with God. It isn't just a label. It isn't just an image. It's something, it's a choice. And every day I choose to take faith. I choose to do an action. I choose to go to meetings. I choose to do daily readings. I'll make a decision in a day when I have something difficult on to just choose this path, this AA path. And so far, it's only been a really beautiful thing in my life. My mantra is acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today. When I accept who I am and what I am, life is beautiful. And that relax and take it easy, man, it's a beautiful place to be. It comes from peace of mind. Peace of mind comes from making that choice to choose faith. And that's why I'm here today, and I thank you all for listening.
Alrighty, next speaker, Carlos from Byron Bay. if he's here. Oh, okay. Hi, Carlos. Okay. Let's have a look. Lee from New Farm Thursday night. Not Lee. Sure.
Hi, I'm Leah. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, indecision. It's stuff just actually started. Light bulbs went off for me just then because my family liked to tell funny stories about me as a kid with indecision, and my grandma especially. I remember she took my brother and I to a toy store, and I would have been about 6 or 7 and he was about 3 or 4, and he just went straight for the football. And she retells this story all the time, and I could not decide which thing I wanted, and this went on and on to the point where I was in an absolute state. And this behaviour never stopped. I only remembered that story just then, and it all kind of made decision because, again, and I think a previous speaker was talking about it, just the motivation behind decision making. And, you know, in that situation, it's like, oh, well, maybe I want this and this could be better. And through my life, the motives have been around, well, maybe this is a better situation, you know, or this strategy, or these people, or these things, and I've come to know now that all of this was about really searching for things that made me feel whole from the outside. And the pain around that, because it never worked, it was never good enough, it wasn't, I never solved the problem, I was still in pain, and drinking actually helped completely get rid of that feeling. Also, another factor to indecision is perfectionism, and this is such a horrible situation to be in because it's sort of like that's not the outside, but that's the horrible expectations that I have or had, still working through, obviously, on myself, where it's sort of like, well, I have to be better and this isn't good enough and you have to, you know, and so working through all of that and that causing pain from inside. I think now, and I'm about almost 2 years and 2 months sober, I'm working with my sponsors still. I'm taking someone through the book. I'm doing service. I have a great group. But most importantly, I'm working these steps daily. And these steps have helped me understand and have, you know, I didn't even know what an inventory was. I had no idea that this was a tool that could be used to understand my motives, the pain that I'm feeling. And now whenever I get to that point and I go, oh my God, something's going wrong here, I actually have to stop and go, all right, where's this coming from, you know, and what's motivating me to think this way, and know which direction. So yeah, I am incredibly grateful to have found this program and working it daily. So thank you.
Can we get Brian from Sydney?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name's Brian, I'm an alcoholic. Hope everyone can hear me clearly. I just think as I get older, I'm having trouble hearing in meetings. I'm having trouble doing a lot of things, but my sobriety date's 12th of May, 1981. And just before then, I was sitting in a psych unit and I wasn't making very good decisions. I was homicidal and suicidal. And I, you know, all due to drugs and alcohol, basically. And I heard about AA. A member of AA came and saw me in that psych unit and told me about this fellowship. And when they released me, which I didn't think I was going to, you know, it was in my mind they wouldn't have, but I didn't tell anyone. And I went to a meeting and saw the third tradition and been at home ever since. You know, a lot of things have changed over that time. My hair's gotten grey and, as I said, I'm getting older, but, you know, I've still got that desire not to drink it a day at a time. And the first year is horrible in sobriety. I don't know if many people here in their first year, but I wouldn't want it back again. Just a little bit. I joined a group because it was suggested. I didn't have any real ability to make good decisions, healthy decisions. Every decision I'd made up to that point was very sick, based on drug and alcohol, you know, and I was controlled by that. So I joined a home group and used to listen to these people, and I'd be amazed how they came up with ways to live, you know, solutions to daily living. I didn't have any idea how to do that. I was having trouble having a shower on a regular basis. So all this other stuff, interacting with people, was pretty hard. And the other thing I had with that was I had this intense buzzing in my head for that almost the first year. It just buzzed, you know, this sort of white noise going on. And it was really hard to think, you know, and I was suicidal on a daily basis. So I wasn't going to say anything about that, but the head was really screwed up when I got here, and it took a long time, a lot of going to meetings, and listening to other people tell me how to live life, a day at a time without alcohol, you know, and I made choices, and then I got better, I suppose. You know, I started to think I knew a lot about recovery, like everyone does, and I used to think in the beginning I was making a choice to stay sober today. You know, I won't pick up a drink. And I don't have that choice, you know, not to pick up a drink. I have a choice to get up and do things that may help me stay sober. Otherwise, I will drink, you know. So, and I didn't have many tools in the beginning to do that. The main one was going to meetings each day. And my sponsor told me to have a checklist for the day, sort of like that, just for the day card, and write down what I wanted to do. And every day I'd go to a meeting. At the end of the day, go to a meeting, and I'd choose one around Sydney and go to that meeting at the end of the day. And oh, by the end of the day, I had two bricks in my shoulders and couldn't move my head. And I'd sit in the meeting and relax, you know, and I'd go to bed that night feeling pretty comfortable. And slowly everything started to get better. And I was thinking, you know, the intuitive, when they talk about making decisions, I don't know. You know, I'm lucky I've stayed sober. Some of my decisions haven't really probably been the best for someone staying sober. You know, about 4.5 years sober, I went to Europe and went skiing in the French Alps. Didn't speak French, didn't know anyone there, you know, just took off and I stayed sober, you know. I was almost drank, almost smoked dope, almost did everything, but I didn't. And then I got to AA meetings and English speaking, and I haven't walked away from them since because I know how important meetings are. The ninth step says, you know, one of the promises talks about we intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And I love that line. That's, I don't know if it's a favourite promise. There's so much in AA that's so good, but I like that line. And I think I've got it in my day, these days, but the ninth step's a long way. You know, so I needed tools, as I said before, that going to meetings. The serenity prayer is another one of the things that I picked up in the very beginning. And to slow my mind down, as I said, it was there's buzzing and there's racing around, and it was off the planet sometimes. And sometimes I'd stand there in that first year, I'd just stand in the lounge room and not know what I'm doing, where I'm going. Just stand there and think, I'm glad no one can see me. You know, just crackers. As I tell people, I had a stamp put on insane. And over the years in sobriety, it's just faded. You know, no one's popped a sane one on yet, but the insane's faded. So, you know, I was a good picture of it in early recovery. But I'd say the surrender prayer, and I would slam my head down. And sometimes it was so bad, I'd have to say it out loud repeatedly to get to the end. And it's not a very, like, it's not a very big prayer, is it? Like, it's very small. And I'd have to say it, God grant me the serenity, God grant me the serenity, over and over. And then my head would slowly quiet down enough to say, oh, I better go and do something now. You know, and I could spend an hour just standing there, just sort of stand there thinking, I've got no idea. And, you know, and now I realise it doesn't matter that much. But, you know, that was a useful tool to have that. And then I'd be able to say it in my head and take it with me out in the day. So I could say the surrender prayer wherever I was. If I didn't know what was going on, I could just say the surrender prayer and relax. And that's, you know, there's simple stuff. Been so over a while, but there's not really much more complicated than that. I love AA. I love conventions coming to this. You know, you get a weekend of lots of AA because life's busy. Everyone's life's busy. And, seeing people I haven't seen for a while. I'm up from Sydney, going for runs. Not many runs into that. I've done 50 Ks this week. Love it, you know. Love getting out on the beach and doing a run in the morning and stuff like that. And I just want to stay sober till I die. You know, the job will end. It's slowly disappearing as I get older and things change. But, you know, I just want to stay sober. And the other thing, if you see me, I'm actually the National Archivist down at GSO in Sydney. So I know a fair bit about AA history. So if you've got any questions you want to ask at all on the weekend, I can make something up on the spot really well. And you won't know, will you? but it's good to be part of that too. You know, as people have said, service is important to staying sober. If you don't want to do anything, you don't have to. But that's, I heard it early on, you know, in my home group, one of the members used to say, if you want 2 bobs worth of sobriety, put 2 bobs worth of everything. You know, you'll get it. That's all you'll get. You know, so if you want more, get involved, be a part of it, and mix with other lunatics. You know, because I think we're, you know, saner than some of the other normal people out there sometimes that are making good decisions. You know, at least ours can make weird decisons and come back here and say, you know, I screwed up again or I did something dumb, and no one will hold it against us. You know, it might be, oh, you're out of the club. You know. And keep coming back a day at a time and enjoy what this program has to offer. Thanks.
This gets taller every time. Alrighty. Steve from Wynnum? No Steve. All right. Jaden from Byron Bay.
Jaden.
Oh my God, I feel like I'm going to spew. fuck. Oh, Jaden, alcoholic.
Hi, Jaden.
Fuck. Sorry if there's kids here. I'm nervous as fuck. I hate sharing, but I can't say no, even though I want to. Just breathe. I'm not mum's clean. I'm in Byron Bay. I was just thinking about, like, indecisions. Well, I had to ask my mate what that meant because I didn't even know. I guess I'm shaking and I need to breathe. this is my 3rd recovery. I remember when I was still using, I was like, oh, I was a bit hit, like, I was over all this shit, and I wasn't getting anywhere with my life. And yeah, so I went to the rehab up the road long term, up way up the road, New South Wales. But yeah, and it was a good decision, and I was very, I don't know why, because like I was over drinking and using. Drinking was like what I started out of as, and then I thought I'll try drugs because drinking wasn't working, and drugs didn't work either. I don't know if I'm making sense, but I was just thinking like today, it's great to get in the car and come up here. I went out for lunch with my nan, loved her pieces, and like, you know, I have that choice today, which is great. My brother's kids live around the corner, and they're only young, but it was just great to see them, like I haven't seen them for like 9 months. My brother's in jail from this drugs, I don't know, like, I haven't been there for them kids. It was awesome, though. Like, after 9 months, he's like, oh, you're my best friend. And it's like, beautiful. But, you know, I'm in recovery, early recovery. I've got a sponsor. I'm saying that because, like, my last two recoveries, I was gonna, and I didn't do anything. And I do believe that, you know, I've got to put a seduction program. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm staying in Byron Bay because I feel that's where I need to be to be safe. And it's a great area for recovery. I feel fucking sick as... Not from drinking or using drugs. I don't know. I'm going to sit down. But it's great to be here. Thank you, everyone.
Awesome.
I'm going to call another gentleman, and the only reason why is because we had three ladies, and then we're going to have three gentlemen, and then we're going to close with another female, so I'm just going to even it out a little bit. Can we hear from Andrew. That
Hello, I'm Andrew, and I'm a proud alcoholic.
Hi, Andrew.
And it's been my pleasure to be part of the committee for this convention. You know, 2 years ago, I was a man dying alone of this disease. My life was tiny. And I was just about disappearing up my own ass. But, you know, and literally, you know, it was just, it's a crude way, but, you know, I'd run out of options in life. It was just, you know, I was frozen by fear. Every day, there wasn't a right way, so I'd do nothing. The only thing that drove me was, in the end, was to make money so I could pay the rent so I'd have somewhere to drink and I'd be able to buy alcohol. There was nothing else, you know. And, you know, all I can say is fear drove me for so many years to the point, and I keep on trying to keep myself safe, but it kept on making my life smaller, you know. And alcohol created this illusion of a safe space at the end of the day. I was a nightly binge drinker. I drank as much as I could. But in the end, and towards the end of my drinking, even alcohol didn't work. It wouldn't shut down my brain unless I totally passed out. And, you know, I could just shut myself down completely, or I'd be awake and I'd be full of fear. I'd feel like something was crushing my guts every day. And it was just, you know, it was a torturous existence, and I just couldn't keep on going this way. And, you know, I think it's God-given that it was a remarkable thing that I'd helped somebody out and then they helped me out. I think I had a little bit of humanity left, and I and I helped somebody out for no other reason. They needed a hand, an old woman who had survivor's guilt. She'd lost her son to cancer. I supported her, and then she supported me. And I remember, and I thought, somebody cares about me. You know, maybe I'm worth saving, because I'd never had that any time in my life. I always thought, deep down, I thought I was worthless, and it wasn't. I always wondered what the point was. So, you know, and one day I just outed myself and I said I can't stop drinking to one of my bosses. And I was, it was remarkable, because I thought nobody cared a shit about Andrew, but everybody jumped to support me, you know. And I was in a detox 2 weeks later, and a week later I was in AA. And coming into these rooms, I was... you know, I felt remarkably alone. I felt I had got nothing in common with these people, but I had the arrogance of judging from the gutter, and I thought I was better than everybody else. I was comparing to my, I was saying, how am I different to all these people? And, you know, I can proudly say 2 years later, I relate to every single person I hear in these rooms. But what this was about is finding God, and then letting God guide my thinking. And I feel so sad that when I hear people in the rooms and people in my life that are in AA who are faced by dilemma, indecision, by stress and worry, that they forget God. Because what saved me was getting down on my knees. You know, and giving up running my own life, because where I was trying to keep myself safe was killing me. And all I can say to anybody that's coming in, this is, it's frightening doing, it's so unfamiliar, so strange to be so honest and to expose yourself. But it's, you know, it's not safe doing it on your own. We need each other. Thank you.
I will now call the final guest speaker, Lisa T from Sutton's Beach.
Hi, I'm Lisa, I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hi, Lisa.
And my home group is the Thursday night topic meeting and at Redcliffe, and the Saturday topic meeting at Sutton's Beach. That's awesome. True humility, eh? It's everything I've needed. I'm really happy to be here today. Very privileged. Facing indecision. Can I have a big book, please? I think, you know, when I was looking at this, I was thinking, oh, you know, what do you tell people, you know? You know, a lot of people come into the fellowship, they stay sober and they get stuck and they kill themselves sober, you know. Unfortunately, it is the reality of this disease. I've lost many friends that way, in and outside the rooms, and some died sober and some didn't. And, page 25 tells me there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the levelling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us to do but pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. And that tells me AA has given me a kit of spiritual tools. It's up to me whether I use them or not, you know, and if I don't use them, I'm usually faced with a lot of pain. And so those tools for me today is my steps. If I'm not sure about something, I'm not sure about behaviours that I'm going through or the way I've been behaving, if I'm not happy about my relationships, if I'm not happy about something, we have an inventory. And it's called putting pen to paper. And I hated it. It sucked. And I had to do it. And I had to do it every time. And it's what my sponsor, you know, always said to me, well, what have you done about it? What have you written about it? What, have you written that down yet? Have you written your list? And you know, don't come see me until you've written it all down, you know? And those fourth steps that I did when I was in severe pain, when I wanted to kill myself rather than stay sober, you know, because that was an option, you know, and this is the way insane people think. This is the way addicts think and alcoholics think, you know. It was all familiar and comfortable to me to just, you know, we'll just stuff it all, you know. Like one, you know, put your hands up in the air and just go, well, fuck it all. You know, that I've always lived like that. I'd always lived like that until I got given a kit of spiritual tools, which my sponsor so patiently took me through and was kind enough to listen to me and show me compassion and you know, and accept me when I couldn't accept myself, you know, and love me when I couldn't love myself. So, yeah, so my steps are my spiritual tool. My prayer and meditation is my spiritual tool. My service is my spiritual tool. Doing service in my district, doing service, you know, taking people to meetings. You know, people I don't even want to take to meetings. That's the hard stuff, you know. Especially when they ring you and they go, hey, no, I haven't got a lift. And I go, oh, God, can I take that? No, I ain't wearing it. Yeah, I'll take ya. You know, and you know, plenty of times I've had that happen. You know, I've been in meetings and I've had resentments again, this person or that person or whatever, and I've rung my sponsor. They just freaking rang me and asked me to take them to the meeting. My sponsor says, take them to the meeting. Take them to the meeting. Buy them dinner. You know, so yeah, you know, it's that stuff that, you know. I live in a fantasy world that I can just keep avoiding everyone and everything. Well, that's no. Bullshit. I can't. Yeah. I can't keep avoiding my program. I can't keep avoiding you. I can't keep avoiding us. I can't keep avoiding my responsibilities in AA. You know, that's not why I believe I was given the gift of sobriety, so that I could go around avoiding. You know. It's an action program, you know, and you know, thank God for Bill W. I found this on the internet. So awesome. Indecision eventually becomes a decision, so Bill W. says, and I thought everyone would like that little poster. I couldn't believe it when I came across it. You know, I looked up on Google indecision, and bang, that came up, and I was like, yeah, I like it. You know. So straight from the founder's mouth, you know, you decide to do nothing. Well, you know what? Someone will decide to do it for you, and you may not like it, because you know this is what happens. You know, I lost things because people got sick of my shit, you know, and they made decisions for me because I wasn't well enough to make decisions for myself. And you know, and it's hard. It's hard putting down boundaries. You know. It's really difficult to place boundaries in my life with the people that I love and the people that I've known for many years, and you know, and that's usually my family and people that I care about. It's hard to put boundaries down in my life and make decisions around my recovery and my self-worth, and you know, I can guarantee they're not going to be happy about it, and they do not like it. and they kick and they scream and they go, why aren't you doing that for me? But I did, like, you did it last time and you paid my bill last time. Why aren't you, you know, it's all that stuff that, you know, there's a certain amount of suffering in decision making, but in the long run, when I put those boundaries down in my life, I'm saying no, no more. I've had enough. Because for once in my life, I'm saying, to thine own self be true.
Nice.
That is what we have got on our medallions. You know, that is what AA's story is, to thine own self be true. You know, even though I might not be able to save my face and my ass at the same time, you know, I can't always be pleasing my partner when I want to say, no, I'm not doing that, babe. No, I'm not doing that anymore, you know. No, kids, I'm not doing that anymore, you know. And that stuff's really hard. No, Mum, I'm not putting up with your shit anymore. I'm leaving now. I've stayed for my 5 minutes. I'm out of here. Gone, you know. I'm sick of the 20 years of you telling me that I'm nothing and I'm always going to be nothing, you know. Awesome. All this sort of stuff, you know. Getting away from, you know, all the shame-based dysfunctionality that we grow up with, you know, and making decisions that, you know, will not only change my life but change the lives of people that I have an opportunity to help, you know. And I love AA, you know, and shit, I'd be dead, you know, 10, 20 times over. I don't know how many times, you know. And but being sober is not easy. Living the program is not easy. Doing shit that I don't want to do, you know. I've spent most of my life in addiction and I've always done what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it, you know. And if you don't like it, too bad. But then I come to, you know, sobriety and I, you know, and I trust someone and I tell them everything. And then they start telling me the truth about what I need to do, which is take responsibility, and I hate it, you know. And but I have to grow up. I realise today I must grow up or I will suffer. And, you know, I don't want to be sober with a gun to my mouth, you know, with a gun to my head. You know, I don't want to be sober and going mad, because I've been sober and I've been mad, you know, and I don't like it. And, you know, indecision is based on fear. Most of my inventories are based on fear. Thank you. You know, and so it's about, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to pick up the kit of spiritual tools? Am I going to pray about it? Am I going to stop, think and pray about it? Am I going to ring my sponsor? Am I going to talk to an older sober member about it? Or am I just going to keep doing the isolating, the doing in my own head, think myself into a drink? Yeah. How does that work out for you? You know, like, it's shit, you know? It means relapse. It means coming back when I've dragged my butt, you know, like, I was 8 years clean, sober. And, you know, 10 years it took me to get what I have today, which is 2 years and 4 months clean and sober. You know? And, thank you. And I don't want to lose that. It's been the best sobriety I've ever had, but I've had to fight for it. I've had to surrender till the cows come home, you know? And I've had to grow up, and that's been the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And... I just wish you all the best and enjoy the journey. From the guys from the Sunshine Coast always say, you know, that the longest journey is from the head to the heart. And, you know, I wish you all well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's thank all of our speakers, our guest speakers, and everyone that's listening. Let's thank Courtney for guest chairing with me. That brings us to the close of our meeting. I've got just a few announcements. In the foyer, we've got the Gold Coast Central Service Office is doing a raffle. They're selling raffle tickets for, and the prize is a second edition big book from 1955, a first edition big Australian print big book, and also a 70 years of growth book. So if you're interested in that, they're selling raffle tickets in the foyer. There's literature and t-shirts and caps available in the foyer for purchase. There are no more dinner tickets, and that's going to be tonight at 6:30. But you all registered for tonight, so come back for our dance. That's going to be happening at 7:30 till they kick us out of here. I mean, until late. So come on back. After this, there you can go across the street to the Ben Lee meeting. And if you haven't purchased a dinner ticket, they are doing a sausage sizzle after, you know, for anybody who's missed out on dinner. So there's definitely options. I think that I've covered all of our announcements. The dinner is going to be a beautiful two-course meal. There's some dancing happening during the meal. So I hope you bought a ticket. If not, you can come and beg me. No. So come back for the dance at 7:30. So let's close. Let's all join hands and close with the Serenity Prayer. And we hold hands so that we symbolize that no alcoholic need be alone.
To the God of your own understanding,
God, grant me serenity.